fallen for nobody.
Yeah, so we got to a very significant moment when Dr. Emery Watson teetered on the edge of disaster, but somehow managed to claw his way back and learn this spell. Having ingested a tiny, tiny amount of this incredibly dangerous fluid,
which dissolved in a lot of gin, so it was perfectly safe.
Yes, it was. It sort of unfolded you as you drank it and lit you up from the inside, as if there was a miniature star.
As all the best gin does.
You make it sound so comforting.
I suppose during all this time, someone has had to be on chamber pot duty. You know, constantly, like, decanting into a new chamber pot.
But I thought the dude...
Oh, you put it in glass. Yes. I forgot, yeah.
Yes, it was decanted because I then used the chamber pot.
Of course, yes. But yes, the strange professor seemed to indicate that...
Charteris. Professor Charteris.
Oh, that's it. Charteris. Wow, amazing. Let me write that down. Not that he'll ever appear again unless something really goes wrong. Yeah, I figured out that the silica base meant that it could be held within glass. Or at least I think Milton worked that out, or one of you worked it out. But anyway.
Maybe my dice worked it out for me.
Your dice worked it out. You have this fluid. Yes, and of course it's inserted into, or at least you have it ready in a cartridge, in a glass cartridge, to go into this strange movie camera device, which, as you know, the film will pass over the end of this cartridge and be coated in this blue liquid as it goes through the mechanism. So, yeah, as to what it does.
And I promised that if Rita dies, we can bring Barry back.
Oh, you did.
That's it, we've got to shoot Rita then.
It's just made me notice that I've got no hit points marked on my sheet. Does anyone know off the top of their head how you...
You sum up your constitution in size and it's a tenth of that.
Right, so I've got 105.
So it'll be 10 hit points.
Oh, I'll be generous. You can have 11. Go on.
Thank you, sir.
Actually, why don't you all make a luck refresh as well? I'll be even kinder. We're going to try and get Emery up to 50 luck by the end of this.
I've passed it.
That's no good. Pass, you don't get anything for a pass in this game. Nope. Well, Ham's got so much luck, he doesn't need any more.
Blimey.
And Milton?
Yes, I'm just...
Milton gets a...
Does it not come up?
No.
No.
Wow, fumble. You get 10.
I get 10?
Yeah, when you get a fumble, you get the full 10. Yeah, that's pretty decent now, 56.
I'm at 56. I thought I was on 24 before.
Well, it says 46 is your...
Ah, right. Ah, you're right. Wow, okay.
Yeah, look at you. Right, so... We can either cut to you arriving at the ranch, or if there's anything you wanted to do beforehand, you can do that. Is there anything you particularly want to prepare or do? And you've got all your weapons, TJ, just in case you were wondering. All in the trunk. Ham.
Now, I've forgotten the name of that the book that the film's based on.
Ziska.
Now, you'll remember that my grandmother had read that to me when I was young. And as a kind of memorabilia, I'm going to read it to everyone in the car.
What about you, but I cannot read in cars.
No, I could never pull that off, not at all.
No.
Especially not if I'm driving.
You see, that's the thing. Now, I wager that Hamp can read whilst he's driving too, because I think that's what differentiates people who are pilots from people who aren't, you see? Because you've got to do all that kind of...
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, all right. Well, then you're fine. Yeah, you can read it to them. Make a power roll then, Rita.
My power is 70 and I've rolled 83. Can I push it, please? Oh.
Well, you'd have to tell me how, because what we're kind of ascertaining now is whether you can perhaps reveal any important knowledge or anything useful to you from this reading. So how would you push the roll?
What I'm going to do is I'm going to do really excellent different voices for all the different characters in the book, you know, to really get into the different characters so everyone knows who's who.
Yes, perfect. I love that. I hope you fail.
I've rolled a 50. I passed it.
Oh, shame. All right, well, let us say that your wonderful rendition with accents has given everyone a very good idea of the overall plot, characters, and sort of motivations of the characters in it. On the way to the ranch, it's probably about 50 or 60 miles to the east of Los Angeles. You've driven down on the coastal highway again. How many times have you driven to LA and back now? Probably about 3 times. I say you're driving, but TJ, Ham, did you want to fly?
Yeah, we should probably fly down there. That's faster. Why don't we all just hop in the plane and fly on down there?
Why not?
I think that's a great idea.
In fact, Reader, you're a big part of this operation. I think you're going to fly. I'll navigate.
Okay, as long as I can read the Siska book on the way.
But actually, flying doesn't need a lot of attention, does it? I mean, once you're up in the air, you're just like holding it steady, aren't you?
Well, it's either the instruction manual or it's some fictional book, you know?
Who are you going to hit?
Oh, you don't need to make a fly roll. You're fine. You know, it's just normal. But here's the thing: you can either land an airstrip, which will still require you to then get some kind of car or bus or something to the ranch, or you can try and land it somewhere near the ranch on a flat piece of desert kind of land.
How does this work? Negotiating a close landing point.
Well, what I would say is, if you want to, that will require a pilot role to land on a non-designated, ooh, on a bit of land that isn't a runway. It's up to you. It's your choice. If you want to have the plane nearby, you're going to have to land, make a sort of improvised landing.
I think it's the latter, isn't it, Hamp? Okay. We're landing near the set, aren't we?
Yeah, yeah.
Fantastic. Now you do have to make a pilot role.
Yeah. Yes, depending on how well you roll, we may end up landing in the set.
This could be the end of the session right here.
Yeah.
Now, if I told you that I just rolled 97, what would you say to that?
I would say that is a really bad roll, but not a fumble, because you've got above 50 in pilot. Have you? Have you got above 50 in pilot?
Yes. Yes, she does.
Well, you can spend luck.
Can I push that one as well, please? Because the way this goes is that during...
Would you put your book down for this?
No. You see, the book is central to all of this. See, during the reading, I stand up and even act out some of the roles and some of the scenes. And, you know, Hamp tells me it's time to land. And so then I just dramatically swing my arm around and knock the stick in just the right way, just in the nick of time.
I contend that if you miss the second roll, we all die.
I've rolled a nine.
Oh, okay. Well, I would say that what happens is you initially you're coming down and you don't realize there's a huge cactus in the middle. You're distracted and there's this huge cactus. And you realize at the last second that if you do try and land, you're going to get a cactus in your face, basically. It's going to come through the windscreen and you're going to be at one with the cactus. And you just managed to pull up in time. Everyone in the back is bumped around as you lurch upwards, skim the top, maybe the bottom of Hamp's landing skids get a load of cactus spikes in them, and then you come down again, and then you skid to a halt, sending up a huge plume of dust into the California desert sky.
I say, have we arrived?
I think so, and I think, in fact, we're right next to the set.
You are.
Ah, that's frightfully convenient.
Reader, you don't have to do stunts every time you fly. You know that, right? We could just have a nice, easy, regular flight and landing at some point.
Yeah, I'll drop my peanuts.
What's the point of flying if you don't do tricks?
I can't argue with that. I really can't.
Thanks very much.
And in fact, as you get out, I guess you're all disembarking. Yes.
Yeah, some more shakily than others.
I'm quickly getting changed. You know, this is a film set. I'm a lady.
You're dolling up, are you?
Just a little bit.
Okay, just a little bit.
But I'm bringing the book. I'm bringing the book with me.
Bringing the book.
I'm walking over to one of these plants here, this big spiky fella, and waving Emery over. Dr. Emery, you know what this is here.
Would that be a yucca plant?
I believe this is an agave.
Ah. Oh, is that what they make tequila out of?
And mezcal, yes, sir.
Ah, marvellous, marvellous. I mean, we should take some samples back.
I cannot argue with that.
And as you're examining this plant, you realize that on a bluff or a kind of rocky crag, not too far away from you, you see a group of men standing on top with a movie camera and some equipment, and there's a ladder leading up to this outcropping, and one of them kind of nudges the other, and then there's a man sitting down in a director's chair just below the camera, and he stands up and he shouts out at you. He says, "You are breaking my concentration."
Do you suppose he's speaking to us?
And he's just waving at you.
I'll wave back enthusiastically.
He takes his hat off and he throws it on the ground, and he stands with his hands on his hips. He's wearing plus fours and a pince-nez, which has dropped out of his eye. And he says, "Go away."
I'm sorry, are we in the shot? Do you want us in the shot? Do you want us to be doing something in particular? I'm not quite sure how all of this works.
He turns to one of his assistants and he mutters something angrily to him. And then the assistant, kind of looking quite sheepish and chastised, he climbs down the ladder and starts walking towards you. And he says, "Herr Todleben is very angry. He says that you are disturbing the ambience that he is absorbing in readiness for the shooting."
Oh, right. So we aren't actually in the shot. That's a shame. I was hoping then that we might get a fee for that, but...
It's a shame you didn't catch that landing.
No, we're not filming. We're just blocking the scenes, sir. Just, you know, preparing.
You're blocking the scenes? Or what, preventing them from happening?
No, we're planning our shoot, sir. So, Mr. Todleben, he's very meticulous. He doesn't like to have his concentration disturbed when he's painting these visual pictures in his head, sir.
Fascinating. We wouldn't want to interfere with art, I suppose.
Well, hang on. You see, that we are actually consultants on the film, and we've arrived. So we're here to make it better, make the atmospherics better.
Yes, but you're not part of the shooting crew, are you? Mr. Todleben's very particular about who should be allowed on set during filming, you see.
Maybe you could say we are atmospherics consultants, if you'd like, perhaps. You see, I've brought my copy of Cisco, you see. This is one of my favourite bits, and I'm going to start reading my favourite passage, just any bit, really, somewhere in, you know, the middle of the book, and just keep walking towards the director.
He says, no, please, madam, please.
No, be quiet. No, I'd like you to listen, please. We're talking about trying to capture the deep essence of this book, you know? The story, the deep story of this. This is going, you know, this is the film, isn't it?
Well, I suppose it is, madam, but...
What's your name?
Okay. Smith.
Is that an Irish name?
No, I'm English, but Herr Todleben likes to work with the European crew mainly. He says he doesn't like the way
Americans
shoot
the movies. Yes, that's right.
You see.
We are mostly European. Well, the core group are European, if you like, but our wonderful aerial captain happens to be a local man, and you can't beat a local man in a local environment.
Well, I suppose not. And then you see that the director, he's now kind of stood up again. He's standing at the edge of this rocky outcrop, looking down at you. It's a shame you can't see this picture, Barney, because it is it's an amazing picture, I found, of exactly what I was trying to describe. He's standing at the edge of this rocky outcrop with his arms folded, and he says, "You are very annoying."
Toddy, hello.
"Do I know you, madam?"
"We are your atmospherics consultants."
"Yuck, consultants. I told that man that we did not need any consultants. I am the only consultant required. It is my vision that we will put onto this film, not some nonsense from the books that you read." "What? You have the books there? It's a piece of trash, that book. I will make my own story, you see."
"How are you planning to change it?"
"I have not decided yet, madam. It will emerge during the process. It is about the process, you see, madam."
"Yes, I do. I also understand that this is a film shoot happening now."
"Yes? Imbecile? Can you not see the camera?"
"Well, I was just wondering why it is that you don't know what you're doing yet."
He starts going red in the face.
"And I think that's probably why Mr. Trevelyan would like you to have a couple of atmospherics consultants."
He says, "Mr. Trevelyan will hear about your impertinence, madam. And he will throw you off my set."
"We've already told him about you."
Look, go away! What more can I say? I do not want you in my eyeline. Get out of my eyeline. Move that way 200 meters. Bitter.
So Rita will just kind of, you know, flick her silk scarf in his face and over her shoulder and then go and sit down in his chair.
Well, to do that, you have to climb up the ladder first.
Okay, I'll climb up the... Well, so we were having this conversation. Yeah. I assumed I was just getting closer. Oh, fine.
He was at the top looking down at you.
I'll climb up the ladder and accidentally lose my silk scarf and let it just, you know, drift across the desert then.
He's just getting incandescent with rage. So he's positively incandescent with rage. And Smith says, Madam, please, Mr. Totleben, he's a very emotional person and we don't want him to, you know, storm off the set. We spent a lot of time and money building the Egyptian temple, you see.
So, Andy, is Smith climbing up the ladder behind me?
Yes, he is.
And he's telling me this whilst I'm kind of kicking him in the face with my shoes.
Sure.
Okay, good, yeah.
He's spitting dust out of his mouth.
Sorry, Smithy, what did you say? I couldn't quite catch that. Mr. Totleben, he's so loud, isn't he?
So Totleben has now gone back and he's sat down in his chair and he's got his arms folded across his chest and he's holding his little viewfinder eyepiece and he's just looking out very fixedly at the desert, at the horizon, ignoring you.
Well, so Rita's going to put on as much charm as she can manage and she walks right in front of his view, turns 90 degrees or whatever, and then just walks straight towards him and then just sits down on the floor next to him and puts her arm on his knee and looks up at him.
I'm really curious what everyone else is doing during this ridiculous performance.
Watching in silent horror.
I turn to Emery and say, I don't remember this part of the plan. What's going on here? Have I missed a meeting?
Is there any of that gin left?
Quite possibly.
I think Hamp's just been looking back and forth between Rita and the film crew with just like this big grin, like as this escalates, just enjoying the chaos.
Okay, all right. Well, no one's going to intervene. So I would say at this point, Rita, you're going to have to make a charm or a persuade roll. If I was being really mean, I'd make you roll deception. Is it deception? I don't know, whatever the...
Fast talk.
Fast talk, because you've been putting on an act, but I won't. I'll make you... You can make a persuasion or a charm roll.
I'll make persuade, because I've got 25 in there.
Oh, yeah.
71.
That's not working.
I think I'm going to push it. And I'm just going to unbutton a couple of the top buttons of my dress.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Just casually, because it's so warm. And I've got a little pocket fan, and I just get my little pocket fan out and kind of fan myself a little bit.
What on earth is she doing up there?
Oh, I've rolled 73. Oh, well, there we go.
Okay, well, Totleben looks down at you with a look of barely concealed disgust, stands up, walks to the edge, and starts climbing down the ladder. And he gets to the bottom of the ladder and he just stalks off through the desert towards the ranch entrance, which is about a mile away. And the rest of the crew are kind of looking around at themselves, looking at each other, going, what the fuck is going on? And then Smith says, I don't really know what to say, miss.
It's fine. It's fine. You don't need to say anything. I understand these creative types.
Yeah. You see, he's probably going to call a halt to the whole production, miss. If I know Mr. Totleben... Might even have you thrown off the set.
I think his ego is too big to do that.
Well, you should see what happened one time. We were shooting The Cabinet of Dr. Cagliostro, and the lead actress insisted on having a larger dressing room, and he burnt down the set. Mr. Totleben burnt down the set. So...
It was probably an accident, don't you think?
Well, yes, that's what we told the insurers, yes.
Rocky outcrops flammable?
What I would like to do as my parting gesture up on the rocky outcrop is to befriend the cameraman.
All right. What are you saying? Well, I mean...
Just in a kind of light, casual way, just chatting and just getting to know. So we don't... I wasn't thinking we need to go into it necessarily, but if you want to...
Okay. No. It's fine. You can make a charm roll.
Oh, God.
You're definitely going to need to make... After your performance, you need to make a roll.
52.
Oh.
I think they are all looking a bit annoyed as well. The fact that you've basically potentially got lost them their current gig by the look of things.
Oh. Are you going to give up without pushing? Really?
No, no, you know, all right, okay.
The devil. He's the devil on your shoulder.
Got right. Another button to undo, perhaps?
Maybe you'd take your shoes off? I don't know.
I think it could be, you know, it could be as much as just complimenting the cameraman on his eyes. You have such lovely eyes. Oh, and your ears. Your ears are so nice. They're almost the same size. It's quite uncanny.
All right.
Okay, here we go. Here we go. Here we go. Come on, under 15. Oh, 39.
No.
I'm tempted, but...
No, you can't do anything there once you push it.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Sorry.
No. You realise, as you're saying this about his ears, that he does have exceptionally large ears, which he suddenly gets very self-conscious about. And he is now your enemy for life.
Okay.
And they're all muttering about self-important, stuck-up prigs.
While this is going on, I'm going to lean over to Spencer and say, I think the young lady may be onto something because, well, obviously, the best course of action would be if this film never actually went ahead. And if she carries on like this, alienating all the crew, then she might single-handedly shut down the production.
Well, yes, I mean, yeah, I guess she's certainly thrown a spanner in the works.
Yes, I think we should encourage her to make all the new friends she wants here.
I gotta say, I'm not the most perceptive guy in the bunch, but anyone else notice that a director fella was a kraut?
Yes, I think there was a hint of that.
I mean, I've seen a good deal of his country, mostly from the air, and it looks really good on fire, I'll tell you that.
Well, I'll tell you what, seeing as we've got off to such a good start with our relationship with him, why don't you go off and tell him that in person?
Noted. And on it. And Hemp stops off.
I'll let everyone make spot hidden roll at this point.
Does that include me or am I?
Yeah, including you.
Okay.
Yeah. Success.
Oh, I passed it.
You passed it. Oh, Emery passed it as well. Yeah. Well, I'm not. Actually, that makes total sense. So, Emery and Rita, because you're really up close. Emery, because, well, you've been studying it. This is not the same type of camera that was in the blueprint. This is, as far as you can tell, just a completely normal movie camera.
Yes, we should keep an eye out for anything that matches the description of the camera that we've built as well, just to make sure, I think, that it doesn't get pointed at any of us. That could be rather unfortunate.
I mean, just to go back to that, I mean, I think knowing what we know about it, I think we would have stowed it away in the plane very surreptitiously.
Yeah, we didn't. I don't think we left anything in the hotel. Like, we don't still have the hotel, right? We just brought all stuff in the plane.
I imagine if we crashed a bit, that blue liquid could have got out and made things very unfortunate.
Yeah, I'm assuming everything is in the plane. It's a good thing you didn't crash, really, isn't it?
It's the end of the actual play.
It seems like work has finished for the afternoon as the crew starts to break down the equipment and start to take it down the ladder.
Who was it who hired us?
You were hired by... Was it Charles Brabin? Did he hire you? I think, well, because he's the producer.
We initially made contact with, Theda, what's her name in the first place, didn't we?
Yeah, and her husband, Charles, who, yeah, so I think they're the ones that...
Mm-hmm. And then when we met Trevelyan, he knew that we had been hired as consultants, like that matched up. He decided not to make any trouble and let us turn up on set, didn't he?
Probably regretting that.
By the way, don't expect there to be any watertight logic to any of this, guys.
No, just any logic. I mean, just water. I'm just looking for water, really. So basically, I think we have every right to expect that we have some sort of accommodation on set.
Oh, yeah, yeah, you're expected. Yeah, definitely.
So where's the drinks cabinet then, right, chaps? Isn't that right?
So you approach the entrance and you can see down below you on a bluff. Well, I mean, it looks like a fairly authentic, like a real ranch that seems to have been converted to some kind of movie set, or at least a movie studio in a way. There's quite a few trucks and cars. There's the main ranch building. If you look really carefully at the back, it actually says there's a gift shop, but I don't think there's a real... It says gift cafe. There's a saloon. And people seem to be busily moving around the set or at least the ranch, working on various... There seem to be carpenters as well as sound technicians and people carrying various bits of equipment around. And as you make your way down, you see that in the main ranch house, there's a man in a cowboy hat, a grizzled middle-aged man in a cowboy hat, and he's sitting, leaning back on a chair with his feet up on the railing. He's wearing dusty old cowboy boots, and he's looking out under the brim of the hat with his eyes squinting towards you as you approach. He's basically head leaning back against his rocking chair, and he's chewing on some chewing tobacco as you approach, and he spits on the floor, big black glob of chaw, and he lifts the brim of his hat up a bit to get a better look at you, and he just kind of narrows his eyes a bit as you approach.
Ah, excuse me, sir. We're consultants. We've been hired to work on this motion picture, and we're not entirely sure who we should be speaking to. Would you know who's in charge around here, or who's in charge of organising such things, at least?
He runs his hand over the stubble on his cheek, looks you up and down, spits again, and says, "Well, mister, I reckon I'm in charge."
Ah, marvellous. Marvellous. Well, we're here to provide authenticity to some of the more esoteric aspects of this production.
Well, I don't know much about your fancy $10 words, mister. But if you're working on this set, you better get your bunk sorted and get to work. I don't like lazy, no-good bastards around here on my ranch.
And he stands up, and you see he's a very big man, probably 6'4", bear-like.
Ah, yes, yes. Well, no, we did come here to work. We just point us in the right direction, and we shall consult with every drop of energy we possess.
He says, "Ah, if it weren't for the money, I wouldn't let your kind on my property."
What, anthropologists?
Yeah, that's what you call yourselves. Anyway, dinner's at 6:00. If you miss it, you go hungry.
Yeah, you're quite a fascinating character yourself. We should talk later. I may be able to get a paper out of you.
He says, well, my name's Thornton, and this is my place, so no trouble. You don't look like you could do much damage, the five of you, but anyway.
Absolutely not. We've been responsible for surprisingly few acts of arson.
Thornton, you say? Thornton?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, now that's...
What's it to you, fella?
Well, that's a storied name. It comes from O'Drennan. It's an old Irish and Scottish name. Scottish first, then Irish later. It means blackthorn tree. Most people just kept it Drennan, but some of them changed it over to Thornton to go along with blackthorn when they came over to Ellis Island, just saying.
Well, I don't know much about that. All I know is my pappy's name was Thornton, and his pappy's name was Thornton, too.
For some reason, I inexplicably know a lot about it.
Well, you seem like a straight-up fella compared to these four. What you call yourself?
I absolutely understand what you mean there. I call myself Hamp Cuddy, and I'm a pilot out of Oklahoma.
Oh, no.
Yeah, now don't hold it against me. I'm a pretty good guy.
Well, that's all right. I'm not from around here either. Anyway, maybe you and me can share some sipping whiskey later tonight.
Now that I can appreciate. Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I'll buy.
Here you're mentioning dinner. What's on the menu?
Pork and beans, boy. Pork and beans. What do you expect out on a movie ranch?
Sounds delightful.
I know there'll be plenty of it. You know there will.
What's the wine being served with that?
What's that?
Wine.
Wine? Wine. If you want to drink any of that fancy French muck, you better bring it yourself, fella.
I'm sure you've got vineyards out here. This place is...
Whiskey and river water. That's all you're getting on my ranch.
Okay.
Whiskey it is, then. Marvellous.
And he says, "I got business to attend to, so, like I said, keep yourselves out of trouble." And then he tips his hat and wanders back into the ranch house.
Well, it seems a bit late for that.
I wonder if they've rewritten the story and perhaps and transposed it to a more occidental setting.
So you're shown to the bunk rooms. There are clearly some much better accommodations for the actors and perhaps the director. There's some actual, look more like private residences, but you'll all be sharing a bunk room with fairly shabby bunk beds for the five of you.
Marvellous. Marvellous.
Is anyone calling top bunk?
No.
And I don't even call it. I just jump up there.
Yeah, no, my knees are not what they once were. I'll take a bottom one. That ladder looks rather precarious.
Yeah, I pity anyone who would have to sleep below me. I'm sure I could. I'll be testing this thing for stress factors.
I really want to know how the bunkmate situation is setting up here.
Well, clearly Emery and Milton have to go on the bottom bunks. There's no two ways about it. So it's a question of who. Yeah.
And how many bunks are there?
There are three bunk beds. So someone could have their own. I think one of the ladies perhaps could have their own.
One of the ladies.
Or maybe the two ladies should together. Yeah.
I think Nora and Rita would share. And we might swap who goes on the top or the bottom if anyone gets vertigo or anything like that.
I'll probably just be over Emery because I don't know how much these old wood bunks are built to support, and maybe Milton's pushing kind of maximum weight limit there.
Plus, pork and beans, you don't want to be anywhere in the sort of anywhere over Milton.
So is Milton on his own then? Are you on your own, Milton?
Milton's on his own, yeah.
But I'm sure they're in a row, which means it's easier for us to talk to you, Milton. That's how we're going to spin it. And we want to be able to see you when we're talking to you. And we're, Milton, what you thinking about? You know, we're trying to go to sleep.
Are you going to get a torch and do some of the
shadow puppets?
I can't imagine us not. We're at a dude ranch, basically. Like, this is good times.
Yeah, Milton, as you sit down, there is an ominous creaking in the old wooden slats of the bunk bed, but it does support your weight.
Yeah, jolly good.
Yeah, so it's getting on to nearly 6 p.m. when dinner is going to be served. And so far you haven't seen anyone that you recognize yet, but it seems like there's a big dining halls at the end of the western street, the main street. And you see a few people like kind of casually heading in that direction as it gets closer to 6 p.m.
So what time is it, Andy?
I don't know, about 5:30 maybe.
Is there a costume hall? Is there a costume fitting?
I'm sure there will be. You want to play dress-up then, do you, Rita?
I don't know about the rest of you, but I think since we're on a film set, we should probably, you know...
I'm fine.
I've always found tweed to suit me perfectly.
Well, then a different tweed?
No, I think this is perfectly acceptable for just about any circumstances, really.
Are you suggesting we go in disguise?
Well, maybe disguise is kind of a strong word, but just getting in the mood.
I don't want to present any undue complications, but why would we need to disguise ourselves when we're expected and supposed to be here?
I'm just wondering what's going through Rita's mind.
No, it's your thoughts that we're more interested in, Milton. That's why you've got the single bed, you know? This we can look at you and ask you questions.
Right, yes, But what are we dressing up for? To get in the mood for what?
I tell you what, I got a bit of a plan.
Oh God,
I thought you might.
Is anyone else going to come and get a new costume? Or only do what you feel comfortable doing. That's what I always say.
What kinds of costumes do you have in mind, Miss Rita?
Well, to be quite honest with you, I can't decide. I have made my mind up, actually. Originally, I was thinking that I might dress up like the director.
Why?
Right, and that's not a disguise?
Well, I told you that disguise is a bit of a strong word. I said we're just getting in the mood.
The mood for what, precisely?
In the director mood. What is your plan? Is it to make another film?
I told you that was my first thought. But the concept I'm going for, the look I'm going for, I want to dress up like a cowboy.
Okay. But it sounds like you want to take over the directing of this movie.
No.
No, no.
Well, a bit. Well, a bit.
What I would say is that if the situation presented itself, if I was asked to take over directing the film, then I'd have to give it serious consideration. But I'm not expecting that at all.
But I suppose that does raise the point as to what we are trying to accomplish here? Obviously, we are trying to prevent whatever it is that Mr. Trevelyan has in mind, and because between, you know, the incantation that we encountered earlier and his subsequent dealings with this cinematic camera type affair, it appears that he is up entirely to no good. So we, I suppose, very much want to stop that. But have we decided whether this involves stopping the film entirely, whether this involves merely disrupting it, whether it involves doing something unfortunate to Mr. Trevelyan? I can't help but feel that we hadn't really thought through the details.
This is it. Is Trevelyan the key here? Is he the person we need to remove from the production?
I think that he is very much at the epicentre of everything that is unwholesome about this production. But that doesn't necessarily mean that we're giving ourselves license to do harm to the man.
Oh, well, I'm not suggesting we do intentional harm to the man. I'm just wondering, we haven't really tested this device that we've built.
Yes, I suppose that we could kill two birds with one stone and test the device on Mr. Trevelyan.
When you had that conversation about doing harm, I was thinking, where's Badger when you need him, yeah. Eh? He'd have just gone up to him with his shotgun, wouldn't he?
I mean, as I was saying that, I was thinking about the rather large pile of bodies we've left behind everywhere we've gone.
I'm just thinking, well, at least with this plan, potentially, there will not be a body remaining if the device works as we imagine.
Yes.
I was hoping that maybe we could rescue Miss Turner, yes.
I thought we'd established that she was long gone last...
No, not necessarily. There is a very great difference between gone and dead.
Ham, you had a thought.
Oh, yeah? I had a thought, but we can cross that bridge when we come to it. It ain't no worry.
I don't know about you guys. I just want to go and get a costume and then go and have some dinner.
Rita, you expressed that you were, you know, you wondered what we would feel comfortable getting into.
Another discussion. There's costumes waiting.
You're dressing for pork and beans.
I think that Milton was just about to join me, or am I wrong, Dr. Milton?
I might try on some of this cowboy garb.
Are you going to get in the cowboy dress?
Yeah, just a bit of fun, get in the mood. I think I finally see what Rita's going for here. I mean, we want to enjoy ourselves while we still can.
Yes, well, perhaps while you two play dress up, perhaps you and I should wander around the set a little bit and see whether there is any sign of our acquaintance, Mr. Trevelyan.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I'm all for it. Everyone make sure you're protecting your skin out here. I don't think you realize how quickly you're going to burn in this California sun. So if you got hats or anything, put them on, you know. I don't know, just anything to cover up a little bit. I know it's hot, but I just want you guys to...
Yes, my dear chap, I've been to digs in far warmer climates than this.
Oh, fair enough. I forget. Use men of the world. You know what you're doing.
We'll find some gingham. We'll be fine.
Okay, so whilst Rita and Milton are going playing dress up, Hamp and Emery, you're wandering around looking for Trevelyan, yeah?
Yes, or just trying to get any idea of whether he's arrived at the set, whether he's got an entourage with him, where he's staying, that kind of thing.
Rita and Milton head off towards the costume house. Emery and Hamp, you're walking up the main street, the Western Street. There's a couple of people milling around, and then you see up ahead near the big refectory, you actually see Trevelyan. He's just kind of pulled up in a big black sedan. He's getting out, and he's got Theda Barra and Charles Brabin with him, and he's in conversation with them, and they're heading in towards the refectory.
Oh, well, I think it'd be rude not to join them.
You also notice that Trevelyan is wearing what seems to be robes.
Of course he is.
What do you make of that?
I think that this is what, in anthropological circles, is known as pretentious nonsense.
Oh, okay. I thought there was something fruity going on.
No, I think it is merely Mr. Trevelyan trying to impress his employers and... Well, yes, let's go and have a word with him and get the lay of the land.
Come to think of it, I think I prefer fruity to pretentious.
Okay, so you head up towards the refectory, and Trevelyan and Brabin and Thedabara, they're sitting at a table, and Trevelyan notices the two of you coming in. He indicates that you to Brabin and Thedabara, and they all look up at you, and they seem pretty welcoming.
I'll give them a cherry wave.
Okay, you've been doing a lot of that today. And Charles says, come and sit with us. Come and sit with us.
Oh, thank you. Yes. I hear the pork and beans here are marvellous.
And as you're approaching, Theda whispers, Dr. Watson, if you want something a little bit better, I have my own cake, my own chef.
That would be marvellous. Thank you. Yes.
I said, am I on the wrong team?
I'll bring you a plate.
And she says, we're only here to show a bit of camaraderie with the crew, you see. I can't eat beans and pork with my digestion.
Of course.
Goodness, no. Charles says, well, I don't mind a good plate of pork and beans. Looks pretty good to me. Mr. Watson, would you join me?
I must admit, I don't have much of an appetite. I'm on doctor's orders. I'm on much more of a liquid diet these days.
Oh, yeah, I get it. Yep. Breakfast of champions.
yes, quite. And I'm delighted to see that you've managed to join us, Mr. Trevelyan. You've made your way out here. I mean, those robes are rather fetching. I must try to see whether I can procure a set for myself. They do seem to hide a multitude of sins.
Yes, well, it's been a while since I've managed to run 100 yards, Dr. Watson. Yes, remarkable. Yes, no, but this is not for vanity. Not for vanity, Dr. Watson.
No, those are professional robes, then.
Now, see, Watson, I thought not. You were saying he was pretentious.
I was.
Pretentious? Moi?
He says, These are more than just symbols, Dr. Watson. You, as an anthropologist, should know that. These robes confer status and power, do they not?
Well, I think it takes a little more than robes to confer status and power. If you're relying on your costume for that, well, that seems to imply that you don't have any innate status and power.
I would not take offence at that, Dr. Watson, as you are our guest here at Mr. Thornton's facilities. Now, I understand that one of your friends has caused a little bit of upset with dear Herr Totleben.
Oh, yes, Miss Rita. She is a rather forthright young lady. I think she was trying to befriend the poor man, but, well, you've met her, you know what she's like. If she takes a liking to you, well, all I can say is beware.
Yes, my scalp still not recovered from our last encounter.
Yes.
She really is the most remarkable young lady.
Hey, that's one way of putting it.
Yes, extraordinary. I believe that she could be setting a vision for what a young lady in future may or may not act like. I find it quite invigorating, to be honest.
I'll be sure to let her know you said that.
Anyway, I'm not eating myself. I have been cleansing, you see, cleansing body and soul.
Yes. One must be in the correct spirit for an endeavour such as this.
And then Charles leans in and says, now listen, fellas, I know you academics like to, you know, do a bit of... he puts his hands over Theda's ears, dick measuring, and then takes them off again. And he says, but look, we got a lot of work to be getting on with. You guys, look, I wanted you to get on. I felt like you could be friends. Can't we just at least try and get on for a few days and get this work done?
Of course. I've come here in a spirit of professional cooperation. I plan to do nothing but help bring this project to the fruition that it deserves.
Well, I'm glad you've got that attitude. Now, Mr. Hamp, I reckon you ain't one of these eggheads, are you? I don't think. You don't look like it.
I'll just take it as it is. Yeah, I don't think I am an egghead. You got me second-guessing myself, because I am quite a grease monkey.
Well, yeah, I figured that about you, and I was just wondering if maybe you would like to help out with some of the more physical work we got going on.
Yeah, why not? I can make myself handy.
Great. And he says, you know, don't say anything, but some of the set dressers here, they're a little bit, they ain't really up to it. I couldn't get my A-team. They're busy doing some chaplain shoot. God knows why they want to work for that little English squirt. But anyway, they're not really, I reckon anyone that could help out with some of the mechanical stuff. We got this very elaborate set up past the hills where we're building out the Egyptian temple. We got this huge, like, papier-mâché doors, and they just can't get them to open and close smoothly. Would you be able to help out?
Yeah, I can help you out a little bit there. Yeah.
Oh, I'm so glad. I told Theta that it was a really good idea bringing you guys on board. You seem like you could handle all kinds of work.
Yeah, we are multi-talented. I'll give our little group that.
And then, at that point, Rita and Milton make their grand entrance, and this is what Milton looks like.
That's what Milton looks like?
Howdy.
He has a huge, outsized 10-gallon hat on, a check shirt.
Well, I like the fact that I look completely, out of place. I'm some kind of, you know, I look like I'm from Cleveland or something.
You look like a fake cowboy, basically.
I want an oversized hat, too.
Have you got an oversized hat?
Yeah.
So you're more Calamity Jane than Will Rogers. So you make your grand entrance, and there's a bit of sniggering, let's say, amongst the crew. So a couple of them are nudging each other. And Theda gets up and comes over, and she says, "Oh, my dears, you look positively gorgeous."
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you, ma'am.
She says, "Oh, how charming. You're trying the accent as well."
When in Rome?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Come and sit down. Mr. Trevelyan's about to do his address, to make his address. Come and sit down.
Well, I kind of think that I could just take a little walk around the room.
Well, thank you kindly. I'll take a seat.
There's a big cast iron pot in front of you with a big, like a huge wooden serving spoon in it. The bowl in front of you, Milton, looks far too small, and the spoon is like a doll's spoon in your hands. I think straight out of the pot, really, with a big wooden spoon.
Indeed.
I'm assuming there's cornbread involved.
Sure.
Yeah.
Is Tortleben in the room?
No, he's not.
He's probably off somewhere force-feeding himself red cabbage.
Rita's gonna walk past Trevelyan, squinting at him like a cowgirl, like a good cowgirl would do, and then sharply turn her head and squint at the people sniggering at her at the nearest table and give them the eye, and then lean up against a wall, you know, with one foot up against the wall, and maybe, I don't know, with a toothpick, or is it a piece of hay? Does she get those kind of things here?
Sure. Are you wearing fancy cowgirl outfit or more working cowgirl outfit? You know, is it all shiny and rhinestone?
Basically, I want to look exactly as close as I can to Thornton.
Okay, yeah. He's maybe just sitting somewhere at the back of the hall, just keeping an eye on everyone.
So I'll go and stand near him at the back of the hall.
Okay, yeah. So you're wearing basically very drab working clothes, basically, you know, denim jeans, I suppose.
If he's wearing denim jeans, I'm wearing denim jeans. If he's wearing a blue shirt, I'm wearing a blue shirt.
Okay, meanwhile, Trevelyan has got up from his seat and he goes to stand up on a small platform at the end of the dining hall, the refectory. It's like saying grace, weirdly. He starts just calling down the blessing of the Father to bless this food that we are eating. It's all a bit weird, really, because he's wearing this robe that is covered in, like, faux Egyptian symbols.
Is there any chance I can recognize the ritual, or at least the general culture that he's drawing upon for this blessing?
Yeah, you can make an occult roll, maybe, if you have.
Would anthropology do?
Or anthropology, sure, yeah.
That would be success.
Okay. You realise that It's not anything specific. It seems to be just a mishmash of various pseudo-mystical Blavatskyan and a bit of faux Egyptology and all kinds of just some Kabbalistic nonsense as well. Just nonsense, really.
So basically pretty standard theosophical wank.
Yeah. I mean, you've heard this kind of thing before, but it doesn't seem to be any real potency to it. It's just waffle, really. But everyone can make a power roll at this point.
24 against 70. Very nice.
That's a hard success.
Failure for Emery.
Okay. Milton, success. Hamp. Okay. Well, actually, the only person that senses anything is Rita. Because you're standing at the back and you've got a good view of the even though to your untrained ears, this does seem like claptrap and nonsense. And for the first time, you're seeing perhaps Trevelyan for what he is, which is largely just a showman, maybe even a charlatan, I suppose. But you definitely sense that there's some kind of electricity in the room. There's, even though his words are meaningless, there does seem to be some flow of power, if you like. And you kind of, it just makes you feel a bit odd while you're watching it, almost as if you're starting to sort of drift, your consciousness is starting to drift away while the words are being spoken. Mm-hmm. So it is confusing. And then what you sense is that the source of power isn't, it's not Trevelyan, but someone else, perhaps. Then it just, the feeling goes and you kind of snap back. Maybe your earlier scare with the near crash landing shook you a bit. You can't quite tell.
Okay, well. So are we free to go about our business?
Yeah. God help me, you are. Yeah, so Trevelyan finishes.
Okay. I was just going to say I'm happily tucking into as much pork and beans as I can get down myself. And loving it.
For those of you that heard the offer from Fader, are you going to not eat? Are you not going to fill up on this rather plain repast? Are you going to perhaps wait for maybe some steamed lobsters from her private chef?
If there's beans and cornbread, I can't imagine them having anything better. So I'm just a little disappointed that there's no buttermilk, because a little bowl of cornbread and a little bit of buttermilk poured in, that's an Oki favorite right there, I'll tell you. Little dessert post.
I might leave a little room, a bit of something to finish the night off.
Yeah, so perhaps the styling here, Hamp, is more like Western desert kind of styling. So it's a bit more perhaps Mexican than Oki.
Oh, that's fair, and that's why I'm not particularly upset about it not being here. I'm just, cornbread and beans, man. There's really nothing better.
So Trevelyan has finished, and he comes and sits down, and he looks very pleased with himself, and he says, I think it's very important to get everyone into the right frame of mind, don't you think, Dr. Watson?
I think that would be a very good idea. Someone should try doing that.
Yes, of course, of course, Dr. Watson. Always with the quick joke and a rejoinder. Hey, you really are a remarkable fellow. Remarkable.
Yes, well, I do find myself thinking that this is a rather wonderful meeting and a rather wonderful experience, a gathering at this film set. I think we should find some way of commemorating it. Perhaps with a photograph.
Quite so, quite so.
Do you think, I'll turn around to Hamp. Do you think, Hamp, that perhaps now might be a good time to dig out the camera and see whether we can get Mr. Trevelyan to pose for a photograph?
I can't think of a better time.
Trevelyan says, oh, I don't know about that. I mean, the light, we've lost, no.
Oh, I mean, you've gone to all the trouble. You've gone to all the trouble of putting on those marvellous robes. It would be a shame not to commemorate what is such a dashing image that you're projecting. As you say, I mean, this is, you have...
But we've lost the light. We've lost the light. We'll have to wait until daybreak. I'm very happy to pose for you. Very happy. But no, I insist. I insist.
This is a film set. If there's anywhere in this country that we can find suitable light for a photograph, it is here. Hamp, be a good chap and get the camera.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And I engineered this camera myself. Low light will not be a problem.
Marvelous.
Hamp, you get up to leave. And actually, as you get up, Charles gets up and he starts walking with you. And he says, what's going on, fella? Why are you so insistent on taking a picture of Mr. Trevelyan here? Look, I ain't no mug. I can see the tension between you and him. What gives?
That's weird. I do what I'm told. So I mean,
maybe not you, but Watson here. He seems to have taken a distinct dislike to our Mr. Trevelyan.
I kind of thought it was the opposite, honestly. Here, walk with me. Walk with me.
I will. Look, this is so important to Theda. You know, she's been really down in the dumps for years now because, you know, with the talkies and all that, her career just went down the chutes. I gotta say, this is her big chance. Please don't mess it up for us.
Oh, no. Not trying to mess anything up. It's just, I look at him over there. Look at him over there. Cavorting and talking. And these ostentatious types, you know, I think you understand what I'm saying. You know, he just wants a little picture.
Fill me in. Why? I mean, why do you want a picture of Trevelyan? I can understand if you want a picture of Theda, and I'd be charging you for that.
I don't know how to spell it out any better for you, but Emery, you know, wants a picture of Trevelyan, if you know what I mean.
I don't know what goes inside the head of some geriatric English professor, but...
I don't either, and I don't want to. I just do as I'm told. I go get the camera when they ask for it.
All right, well, look, we can't take it in there. There's no light. We'll go to the soundstage. We'll get the lights set up if you really want to. God damn it, I don't know why.
I mean, I don't really care, but, you know, they're kind of in charge, so I, you know, like, I get paid. But yeah, I'd appreciate you setting up the stage.
God damn it. All right. Look, as long as this gets everything back on track with you and Trevelyan, we start shooting tomorrow.
Shooting?
There's no hiccups.
Who said anything about shooting?
Camera shooting, gun shooting.
All right. Yeah.
And with that, Braben heads off and he gets... You see him talking to some of the crew. Obviously, he's trying to arrange for the lights to be set up on the soundstage, which is going to be in the arena, actually. So some of the crew go over to the arena and you see they're carrying some pretty heavy lighting equipment. Maybe they got it on some trolleys and they're pushing it up. And then Trevelyan is like, he's looking at you, Watson. He's saying, well, I will humor you. I don't know why you wish to have a photograph of me, but then you are a rather singular fellow.
So I've been told.
Well, should we go then?
We shall.
Okay, so Rita and Milton, what are you doing? Milton first. You're just maybe mopping the last bit of beans out of the huge pot with the end of the cornbread.
Some mighty fine corn and beans here.
You've eaten enough for about five people, I'd say, at this point.
Yeah, well, I you know, step back.
Loosen.
Rubbing my stomach. Yeah, maybe go down a couple of holes on the belt.
We call enough food for...
Thank God no one's sleeping on the bunk over you tonight.
We call enough food for five people half a Milton. That's a half Milton.
As you're loosening up your belt, Theda looks at you and says, oh, Mr. Milton, what's that beautiful platinum thing around your neck?
Oh, this thing. Oh, just a little keepsake.
Oh, it's gorgeous. It looks old. Is it British?
I have to be perfectly honest with you. I probably should really be in a museum somewhere. It's something I found on an excavation and I just took a shine to it. I should have kept it more covered up, but I see you're a woman of discretion.
May I look at it, Mr. Milton?
We can look at it, you know, but please don't touch.
Oh, sure. I've just never seen anything like that before. It's fascinating.
It is quite unique.
So are you going to, like, take it off and show it to her?
Oh, I'm not going to take it off. I'm just going to...
Oh, you're not going to take it off. You're just going to hold it up. Okay.
Bare
his chest.
Show it to her.
No, it was kind of like dangling. It was dangling. It was dangling forward, Liz. Okay, so you hold it out and she looks and says, the craftsmanship is exquisite, Mr. Milton.
Mr. Doctor, call me what you like.
I don't think we've ever established. Are you a doctor or a professor or a mister? Are you a doctor? Did you get your doctorate while we weren't looking?
I think we've called him doctor before. I certainly have.
It's kind of been interchangeable. I haven't really insisted, to be honest, because of my humble beginnings. I'm a little embarrassed about people calling me doctor.
Right, right. And she says, is that gold and platinum? It looks like it. Oh, how beautiful.
It's certainly quite a unique combination of materials. Do you mind if I put it away?
Oh.
I'm rather attached to it. I don't want to draw attention anybody else to see it. You could have a closer look at it some other time, perhaps.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to be so forward.
No. I wasn't, suggesting anything. I heard a rumour that you've got your own chef, you see. And I thought perhaps I might be invited back to the for nibbles.
Well, yes. You could see I didn't really touch my food. This sort of thing doesn't agree with me. Yes, you see, he's making some lobster thermidor later. And I if you play your cards right, Mr. Milton, I'm sure we can get one put aside for you.
Well, I will be delighted if that were at all possible.
You like seafood?
Yes. Anything with food at the end. It seems to work for me.
Oh, yeah, I can't get enough of it. So, Rita.
I was just going to say that when Rita sees Hamp leaving, she also leaves the tent.
So the two of you then meet up and, all your equipment, of course, is...
But it's all in our bunk room.
Maybe the tripod was too big and you need to collect
sure.
that.
Sure, that sounds good.
One little thing that Rita would like to do is she'd like to swap her fake gun for her real revolver.
Oh, okay. Yeah, the gang that couldn't shoot straight, yeah? So you are armed now with real weaponry, and you have the tripod, and you take it back, and you can see that there's a small group of crew, and Trevelyan, and Charles, and Thader, and Milton, and Emery are all heading up towards the arena.
What I would suggest is that keep a black cloth on the camera during the process of setting it all up and only unveil what exactly it is just before you take the photograph.
Okay. I think that can be done. That can be arranged. Not a problem.
Okay. So, you head up to the arena. The lights are being set up and people are milling around. And Trevelyan comes over and he says,
well, Dr. Watson, are you ready for my close-up?
Yes, we are.
And he says, where do you want me then? In the middle, I would say, commanding this arena.
Yes, you look rather majestic there.
I was just giggling and nudging the guy beside him.
Yes, and he says, this shall be my greatest performance.
Indeed.
As he strides out, he looks comical, really, as he waddles along in his long Egyptian robes. He's actually put on a sort of one of those Egyptian headdress type things with the cloth hanging at the back and the band around the front, and he looks utterly ridiculous.
He taught Alistair Crowley everything he knows.
Yeah, exactly. And you're starting to set up, and you can't help but notice that deep in the shadows off to the side of the arena, first of all, you just see the flare of a match and the red glow of a cigar, and then some smoke rises. And then through the gloom, you see that Deke Thornton is sitting on the fence that surrounds the arena. And he looks over at you and he says,
no trouble, fellas. Remember what I said.
Perish the thought.
And I think that is where we will end the session.
How wonderful.
You're right.